ZC Live. Register for your free place. Visit zcsocialmedia.com. Interested in collaborating with like-minded Kent businesses? Join our supplymybusiness.co.uk community today and start growing your Kent business network for just £20 a month.
This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show on Kent Business Radio, on Biz Radio and channelradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 12th of December. I'm all out of breath. I just ran downstairs to the loo. Sorry about that. And Bird's out making a cup of coffee. So there's just me and our guest in the studio at the moment. And we're going to be introducing you to our guest fairly shortly. I'm just trying to sort through all my emails because I've got tons of emails here. And loads of them that I haven't read out. And I need to find the next one to read out. And I can't find it anyway. But here's Bird. And she's back. And I found my emails. There's a record number of small firms in the UK. The UK small businesses contributed, wait for this, a huge £1.9 trillion to the economy this year, according to new government figures. The latest business population stats from the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy show that there's now a record 5.7 million small businesses in the UK, proving that despite rising costs and flagging consumer demand, entrepreneurial spirit is not easily shaken. That's 5.7 million businesses. Amazing.
Why are you out of breath?
Because I ran down to the loo and back with only 30 seconds to do it in.
That's so funny. Makes me laugh.
I know.
Landlord alert. F or G EPC rating properties can't be let after April 2018. What does that mean? So in less than 5 months, the minimum energy efficiency standard, that's MEES, regulations will make it unlawful for landlords in England and Wales to let commercial or domestic buildings that don't achieve a minimum energy performance certificate. So that's an EPC certificate. That's rating of an E. Almost one in five commercial buildings is F and G registered posting. Posing a huge challenge for landlords. Failure to upgrade your building prior to 1st of April 2018 will mean that you won't be able to market or renew any contracts, and many UK banks are refusing to lend F or G rated commercial buildings. You could face fines up to 20% of the rateable value, so that's minimum penalty of 10,000 and a maximum of 150,000 per building if it's found to be non-compliant. Interesting.
Absolutely. I've got loads of tweets suddenly started to come in again. I've had a tweet from the lovely Andrea Starbuck at 10 to 2 Kent. And she says, can we have a Business Bunker shout out for 10 to 2? She said, we're actually listening at the Kentish Hair having our Christmas lunch.
I thought it was a hairdresser's.
The Kentish Hair.
Yeah. Could you imagine it?
Yeah, no, I think it's a pub, actually.
Okay.
10 to 2, really interesting organisation. They're right on the vibe at the moment. They specialise in flexible recruiting and flexible. The gig economy is where it's all happening now. So big shout out to Andrea and the team at 10 to 2. Kent, fantastic.
Well, Networkers Networking has posted up a better photo.
Right.
Which clearly it isn't, is it? She's put a terrible one up of me being really silly in the background.
Is that the one of you going?
Yeah.
Okay.
You've got to go on and have a look. So she's put, sorry, bird on a bike. Here is a better picture for the first networking event that you spoke at. So we actually thought it was very funny. Well, you did, because you thought she'd put me on a photo because it was the early bird.
Yeah.
It wasn't. She put laugh out loud. I'll use that for the next one. Really?
Come on, dear. I'm working it, dear.
Yeah. That's hilarious. I find that so funny. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, continue in the festive spirit with Pilgrims Hospices tree recycling. So when Christmas is over and your tree begins to look a little bedraggled, let's call it, why not continue the spirit of goodwill by donating your tree to Pilgrims Hospices? Do you know what? This is going to save me, because unlike you, Mr. Andrews, I do buy a real tree.
Uh-huh. Do you?
Yes.
Well, I don't need.
Where's your spirit?
I don't need it. My
the you, smell. You've is
been. You've
to
been
none.
To my house, right?
Yeah, beautiful.
What is my house surrounded by?
Trees.
And what kind of trees?
Big ones.
Big Norwegian spruce trees. Yes. Yeah, hundreds of them over 100-foot high, all the way around my garden.
You should have got Lucy just to throw some stuff on them.
Exactly. I should send her out in the garden and just put some tinsel on them.
Well, anyway. Yeah. East Kent-based charity, which provides specialist palliative care, is once again offering its popular tree recycling scheme, Do You Come to Sandgate, to all residents living in the Ashford Borough. Ah, Ashford. It needs to be more global, please, Pilgrim's Hospice. Last year, the charity raised more than 17,000. That's awesome. And they need volunteers to collect old Christmas trees from your homes. I love it.
Fantastic. 17 grand, that's a lot of money.
That's brilliant.
For used Christmas trees, isn't
brilliant.
It?
Yeah. Brilliant idea. I'd pay. It's the bane. I love getting it. I love waiting for a nice day like this. Stick it out your roof. It's hilarious. Yeah. And then to get rid of it is a bit of a sad thing.
Yeah.
Do you ever give them a little noise, like a little voice or anything?
Where I used to live, in the house I had before, the one I'm in now, which is quite a big house, we had a galleried landing, and it was a three-story house, and the centre of the house went all the way up to the top.
How big did you go?
So we used to have a 30-foot tree indoors, yeah, that went all the way up. And it took five of us to get it up, and it took about 10 of us to get it down. And the only way to get it out was to saw it up afterwards. The mess was unbelievable.
Did you not feel like you were murdering it?
No.
Oh.
I thought it was murdering us. More like.
I would have had to make a little noise. Like yeah, that, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's far too big today, that.
Oh, no, let me go.
Talking about that, have you seen that there was a conversation last week between Fiona Stevens and all the people that from Channel Radio talking to the tree in Trafalgar Square?
No.
On Twitter? Did you not see it?
No.
It was really funny. Did you see it, Fiona?
Yeah, I heard about
it. You heard it? Yeah. Fiona, who's working in London at the moment, took a photograph of them putting up the tree that Norway donates to the UK every year that goes up in Trafalgar Square. And she took a picture and put a selfie of her in front of the tree. And she posted it on Twitter. And about 5 minutes later, the tree replied to her and said, oh, thank you for having your photograph taken with me. And from then, for 4 days, there was this running thing. And Amanda eventually went up to London to do something and took a selfie in front of the tree. And then Mark Gainsford went and sung to it. It was hilarious. It was just this really silly nonsense. Anyway.
It's true, though. You've got to give noises to stuff.
Have you?
I've got a funny story about this. When I used to live in France, we used to have a house in France, and I went running. And they this is the north part of Calais, so they weren't really that in tune with running or anything like that. It, big cyclists. And the children used to follow me on the bikes. And there was this hedgehog going across the road, and it was in one direction. And I picked it up, and I know you're going to say, you shouldn't pick hedgehogs up, but I thought, I don't really, you know, it's a little lane in the back.
Yeah.
And I was going, oh, no, don't pick me up, you put me the wrong way. Do you know what I mean? Because you're probably thinking this hedgehog might be, no, I've just taken 8 hours to get this far, and then it's just a funny little thing.
It wouldn't have said that either.
Ah, merde.
Yeah, what? Exactly. It's a French hedgehog. Come on. It was a French hedgehog. It would not have said that. It would have gone mange tout fromage, wouldn't it?
I often put little noises to something. I think I've got something wrong with me anyway. Carry on.
I'm sure you have. Yeah. I had a tweet from Alison Palmer at the Federation of Small Business Office. Yeah. And she says, could we have a Business Bunker shout out, please, to the many Kent FSB members who've made this year so great? And she's listed them all, and I'm going to run through some of them. U-Image Consulting, Amanda Flanders, Lucy Hall, 10 to 2 Kent, Biz Doc Invicta, Fire Station Tunbridge, Southeast Timber and Damp, Dave Millam, SP Wedding Events at Sarah Paul, Andrew Knott, Daryl Lynham, and of course Vanilla Web. Well, thank you for that, Alison, and thank you for all the work that FSB have done this year too. Great stuff. Did I not mention you, Bird?
No.
I think she ran out of characters.
Alison.
And Bird. Oh, and P.S. and Bird on a bike.
That's not what it says. What is it with people today? They're all forgetting me. Alison, come on.
How can you forget
Bird? I know you're
Bird.
Listening. I know you're listening. Come on. Right.
Cool. We're going to do one more email, and then we're going to talk to somebody sensible at last.
Which
will be really good.
Excellent.
I've been stalling with this. I've been stalling with this for ages because I've got to get her name right.
I can't wait.
And I'm struggling with this so badly.
To be fair to you, though, to really be fair, you have tried... Didn't he flow to say, how do I pronounce your name properly? Because it really means, and I agree with you, it means a
it
lot.
It does mean a lot,
how
yeah.
you pronounce people's names.
Shall I tell you the funny story about that?
Go on.
I was doing a leadership training program in Amsterdam about 20 years ago.
How can you say Amsterdam? Don't you say Amsterdam?
Amsterdam, yeah.
I can't help it. I'm sorry, Flo. Amsterdam,
yeah. There's so many stories about that. It's like, what's his face? Steve McLaren, the football manager, when he was managing Twente and Sunday or whatever in the Netherlands. And they interviewed him on Dutch TV, and he did the whole thing in some fake Dutch accent. It was hilarious. Anyway, I was doing this leadership program for Cisco,
in Amsterdam. And there were about 25, 30 people on the course. And at the start of the course, I said, I want you to introduce yourselves, tell me your name, tell me what your role is in Cisco. And so people were telling me their name, and I'm trying to remember their names. And we got to a guy, and he said, hi, my name's Keith. And I went, no, it's not. Keith is not a Dutch name. You are not called Keith. And he said, no, I call myself Keith because you wouldn't be able to pronounce my name. And I went, no, I'm sorry. I'm a real stickler for knowing people's names. Tell me your name because I'm going to use your proper name. So he told me. So I said, okay, Keith, thank you for that. Yeah. We'll carry on. I couldn't pronounce it at all. But I'm going to go for it. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, Flotje Hütte.
Well done.
Sorry about that.
Great Flo. Effort. No.
She said, call me Flo, and I feel a fraud by doing that.
Yeah, Flo or Floor.
Yeah.
But Floor must be odd for you guys to say Floor because it's the floor. It's even written exactly the same way. So
why don't you pronounce your name so that we know it properly anyway?
Flotje. Flotje Hütte.
Okay, cool. Flotje, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Flotje is with the University of Kent. Based over there in Canterbury. You are on the Canterbury campus, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you, first of all, because we've established that you're Dutch.
Yes.
and then tell us a little bit about your work at the university, and then we'll go on to talk about some of the things that we've got coming up in 2018.
Okay. Flotje is my name, from Holland. Came to Kent in 2006.
Okay.
Ran my own company here with my then partner.
Okay.
Tree surgery company.
It was what company?
Tree surgery company.
Tree surgery?
Yes.
Ah, so there you go. So she kept quiet all the way through that. She didn't mention
she
knows that we were hurting the trees.
Well, we actually shredded the trees that were collected by Pilgrim's Hospital.
Oh, did you?
With our company.
See, this show isn't just thrown together. Yeah. It's produced. There's a theme through all of this.
Because, yeah, after they collect all the trees, they of course, get rid of it. So, okay. Yeah, we shredded a whole day.
It's okay. One of those big chipper machines.
Yeah, it is.
Cool, okay.
So we did that, changed jobs, and did some work in Holland, in an external relations team working for a museum, and really liked that. So then went back to the UK and started to look for something similar, and ended up at Kent Business School within the University of Kent, where I've been working now for almost 2 years.
Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit about your role there at the University of Kent Business School.
Yeah, so we have a small team of three, external relations.
Right.
So we deal with all parties outside of the school who want to do something or want to work with the school, which is mainly businesses, but also other schools, alumni, of course, people have been at Kent Business School and want to give back, want to work together with the school again. So, we build new relationships, but also have a lot of long-standing relationships, a lot of good friends that keep coming back to us.
Absolutely. I haven't been involved with the university for a while. I used to be quite heavily involved many years ago. I was a business ambassador for the Incubator Hub.
Yes.
At the university. And back in the day, you used to have a program, which I'm trying to remember what it was called. Was it the Kent Technology Transfer Program?
Yes.
Do you still run those kind of programs?
No, but we don't run a hub at Kent Business School, but we have our own acceleration program.
Right.
Well, it's actually a bit bigger than that. It's called Aspire.
Right.
And it's all about social enterprise, responsible enterprise and innovation.
Mm.
And within that project, we run a business startup journey. So we help students who have a business idea to develop that idea. We take them through a 9-month extracurricular program.
Okay.
Where we have lunchtime sessions where we walk them through basically how to start a business.
So right, okay.
How do you do your market research? How do you put a financial plan together?
Mm.
How do you do your social marketing?
Mm.
And then we have mentors as well from the business community that we work with.
Right.
So they do one-to-one mentoring. We have an entrepreneur residence who basically garden. And last year we had a fantastic winner who's now developing her own app. It's a sort of a Tinder for animals.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
It's called Perfect Match.
Yeah. To get it, poor fit match. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a fantastic way for catcheries and kennels to put their whole stock of lovely animals that they didn't really have any marketing means before that. You see the occasional poster in a veterinary clinic, but that's about all the money they have to spend on that. So now they can photograph the animals that they still need to find a home for. She puts it on her app, and then people can swipe left or right which animal they like.
I love it.
Put their preferences in, and hopefully find the pet for life.
Yeah, so I love that idea.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so actually proper ideas come out of the program. It's not just a jolly, but it's also for people who just want to explore being an entrepreneur, to learn those entrepreneurial skills, to work together with other students on it. It's a lot about, you know, working in a team, understanding each other's strengths and working on your weaknesses. And be entrepreneurial. That's what we want.
Absolutely. It's interesting as well, isn't it? I know that that Kent has been at the forefront of this. It's a kind of change over the last 20 years or so with universities. You're seeing lots and lots more of graduates graduating from university rather than wanting to go into management training programs with big organizations, wanting to actually start their own businesses.
Yeah.
And that's a massive change. And as you're probably aware, I own Fruitworks in Canterbury, which is an incubator and hot testing space. And we've got 140 businesses there. And I'd say well over half of them came out of the University of Kent somewhere down the line with their spin-off businesses. So it's a fantastic thing. And the kind of effort that you're making as a university is the thing that's adding to the numbers that we just read out about the rise in the number of small businesses.
Yeah. It's also easier, I suppose, to start a business now. You don't need, you know, a big office space anymore.
Absolutely.
You don't need so much staff with all the technology available. You can literally work from your bedroom, actually, in your student flat.
Exactly.
Instead of your business, all you need is a laptop, and you need to write contacts, people who you can, you know, employ as and when needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Funnily enough, I was having a political argument with someone the other day who was moaning about capitalism. And I was saying, but we don't actually have capitalism anymore. Capitalism was something in the 19th century when you needed a huge amount of money to start a business because you had to buy a factory or a steam engine or something. Yeah. You can now start a business for pennies in your back bedroom, and you can continue to be a global business,
thank you,
like birds, while still operating in your back bedroom.
Yeah. But you still need, you know, good advice on finances.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you still need all that. Yeah. And I think that's also a very important aspect of the business startup journey, that we allow people to fail while they're still in that protected environment that we create for them.
Yeah.
And we actually encourage people to fail. You know,
try it out.
It doesn't work. Start again. But at least you haven't spent so much money.
Absolutely.
That you actually need to save now until your business plan is really good.
Yeah.
And then you can go and spend it.
Absolutely. And I don't know how you feel about this, or even if you're familiar with it. One of the things we did with business incubators, and this isn't just students, it's people from all kinds of walks of life that start businesses, tend to start businesses based on whatever it is that's got them into it, you know, whether it be flower arranging or apps or whatever. They're enthusiastic and passionate about that bit. What they don't really have is the bit that go around it. So one of the things that we always did was use the lean startup model. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. Which makes people make a minimum viable product and then put it in front of a customer before they finish developing it. Because one of the problems, especially with technology, is people can tinker with the technology forever and ever and ever before they ever put it in front of a customer. And then when they put it in front of a customer and the customer goes, well, I don't want one of those, you know, they've wasted a lot of time and effort and money.
Yeah, we have next door our entrepreneur residence, also a techie entrepreneur residence, in addition. So he will also talk through ideas with the students.
Cool.
And as you say, kind of try not to spend too much time coming up with 50 different
fiddling with it. Yeah, absolutely. So as an organisation within the university, the Kent Business School, and we were talking about this off air earlier, were we not? I think it was 2 years ago now, we did a big thing on the Business Monkey here, on the BIG programme, which was a big initiative that the Kent Business School ran, which was absolutely fabulous. We still got a lot of the stuff on there, on the website, actually, and people still download the booklets from it now, today. Really interesting stuff. But I know, Flo, that coming up early next year, you've got a big summit happening at the university. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, okay. So maybe I should give a little bit of history to how the summit came about. Mm. So the referendum happened, obviously, last June last year. And as you can imagine, the school was, of course, apprehensive about the outcome.
Because
we are the UK's European university.
You bill yourself as a European university, and you're the nearest university to the continent that
exactly.
we have.
Exactly, and we have, you know, we have, of course, huge EU funding coming in. Mm. We have a lot of our staff is our EU nationals. Mm. We have quite a big percentage of EU students coming in. So there was a lot of questions and a lot of apprehension right after it happened. So, of course, we were talking about that within Kent Business School as well. And then we thought, okay, that's all, you know, we can look at the negatives, but why don't we try to approach this in a constructive way? Mm. And surely we have, as an educational institution, a role to play here to see what are the implications of what's going to happen now for the Kent economy, for Kent County. Mm. And I think we should monitor it. Mm. So we started to think a little bit about that. So one of the first actions we did... Actually, one of the first actions that happened is that our lecturer, Franciscos Filipaios, took on a KTC assignment, Internationalization of Kent Businesses. It was a follow-up study of a 2012 study that had been done. So he looked at, had Kent businesses over that five-year period become more international? The referendum happened, so we put the whole Brexit angle on it, and he also interviewed businesses about how does Brexit influence your decision to go international. So that was actually our first kind of piece of work, Brexit-related work. Then we said, okay, we need to get businesses around a table in Kent, and we want to have a wide array of businesses, different sectors, different sizes, and we want to hear their opinion. What are the challenges? What are the opportunities they see? What are their concerns? Mm. Let's just get it all out there just to get a flavor of what's happening here.
Yep.
So we've got a really interesting group of ranging from a very small family company in fabrics to a multinational engineering company based in Kent. And it was a very interesting discussion, a lot of interesting outcomes. One of the outcomes that was very clear is we want to do this at a much larger scale. We want to talk about Kent politicians, about our concerns. Mm. We don't really get to speak to them that often unless we go to London. So if you could create something that would give us that opportunity, please go ahead. So we sat together. So IUD and the Kent Business School organized this initial round table. We sat together afterwards and said, let's do a summit. Let's just go for it. Let's do this big and bold and make this into something annually. So that we can monitor on an annual basis where all of this is going. So we set out, involved Federation of Small Businesses, so it became a three-way partnership, managed to get some sponsorship from Crowe, Clark and Whitehill, which we're very appreciative. Mm. It's really helped us out. And started to plan. So we thought we have to kind of do it in the same vein. So the summit now has three parts. It starts really early. I'm sorry, but it's roundtable discussions on five different topics, which is leadership in challenging times, art of export, innovation post-Brexit, how to put Kent on the map, and UK workforce of the future, where we invite businesses to sit together, again, discuss their concerns, but not just to concentrate on the negatives, but also to see what can we actually do on these topics, what kind of action plans can we put in place pending Brexit. Mm. Outcomes of those roundtables will feed into ongoing research in the school. So these roundtables are followed by a plenary where we have four speakers who will talk about. We have David Smith from KTC, Head of Economic Development, who will give his vision of the Kent economy in 2050. So it's like a long-term vision. We've got Jane Hollis, in her capacity as Business Development Manager for Cuvium, which is a techie startup. She'll talk about the importance of innovation. We have Jane Eli, who is the COO of NHS East Kent Trust. Mm-hmm. She will talk about increasing productivity against all odds, so that should be really interesting. And then we have a Greek businessman, Vangelis Gizelis, who's coming over from Greece and will tell us how he managed to grow his business in Greece in very turbulent times.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's who own here.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably some very interesting outcomes.
We have a panel discussion with all of the speakers. And then the third part is the lunch with Kent MPs. People can register separately for that. It will give them an opportunity to talk to their Kent MPs in a very informal setting and have that opportunity. So
cool. It sounds like a fabulous event. Interestingly, I ran an event, not on the same scale as you, but 2 years ago, which I called Forging the Future. And I got 50 of Kent's fastest growing businesses for lunch, in which we discussed what we, obviously this was pre the referendum, of what we saw as the trends that were developing over the next few years. And we identified six trends, which interestingly, 2-3 years on, have all actually come about. So I'm planning to do another one next year to move it on from there. But it sounds like we could actually get quite a bit of output from the event that you guys are running.
Absolutely,
and it sounds like a fantastic event. And while you were talking there, Flo, it kind of struck me, and I really love what you said. You know, as an entrepreneur myself and as a business person, you learn as you go along that circumstances aren't always what you want, but you can't change those circumstances in any meaningful way. So you have to be prepared to adapt to them. And one of the things I'm finding really dismaying at the moment is people are running around wailing and gnashing their teeth and going, this is all wrong. But the fact is, no matter what happens, whether we stayed in, whether we leave, or whatever the outcome of any deal that we strike, you've still got to adapt to it somehow.
You still need to keep your business afloat.
And you still need to keep your business afloat. And and in the years to come, things will happen. And it's not just the political environment. Technology has been the biggest disruption of most businesses in a generation. And we're entirely focused on the wrong thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, we've already mentioned in the show earlier today things like cryptocurrencies and fintech and the things that are disrupting the whole economy. And we're at the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence and virtual reality. There are so many things happening.
Yeah, it's coming at us from
and
all
it's coming
directions.
At us from all kinds
it's
of angles.
Here.
And
yeah.
It's here.
Not, it's
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
So you have to adapt.
Yeah.
It's really interesting you said about talk to them about failing. And I call it testing potential of everything. So I test the potential of everything. It's not. Most of it is a nonsense, but you've got to test it and test it and test it. And you said one thing, an action plan. The amount of people that I hear great ideas from, that I hear myself, I could tell, oh my God, I should be a multi-billionaire with the amount of ideas. How many times have we sat down, I've gone, oh my God, Paul, I've got this idea. And you don't action it because either you don't think it's got legs or you don't test the potential of it. Or so an action plan. I was talking to James Sinclair last week. The biggest thing he sees of entrepreneurs is they do not action.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think also it's in all of this, it's so important that I think businesses know where to find each other. And they know already. Mm. But, you know, we want to provide another platform where that can happen and where people can sit together and do business together and, you know, understand each other's problems and help each other out. So that it's the same in a very small context. It's the same that happened with the first roundtable discussion where businesses sat around the table who probably otherwise would never have talked.
Absolutely.
And they started a conversation and, you know, they had things in common.
One of the reasons I like things like the summit that you're doing and the fact that the University of Kent is doing it is one that adds gravitas to it anyway because you're a seat of academic learning. But you're absolutely right. Most businesses work in isolation. They don't have the opportunity to sit around either with their competitors as well as other businesses and just chat about where things are.
Well, if you're a global business.
Like you.
Like me.
Yeah.
My competitors aren't in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
So how do you meet, you know, how do you come together as a forum? I just love the word round table.
Yeah.
I just think it absolutely gives a vision. It gives an understanding of how you're going to behave around the table.
Yeah.
And even the, you know, maybe the person around the table can't help you, but he will know somebody who can.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating getting other people's views on where they see their businesses and how they see their industries. Because, again, as an entrepreneur, one of the great benefits is ignorance. And what I mean by that is, you know, I look at a business that I know nothing about and I go, I could do that differently. Because I'm not trapped into the thinking of that industry, you tend to be able to see it from a different point of view. Therefore, if you can get around a table with people that don't work in your industry and they go, but why don't you do that?
Yeah, and it's. I think that it's. I recognize that very much from when I run my own business. Yeah. You're so stuck in the middle of it that you don't have the time or the energy to take that step back and look at it from the outside and say, actually, we've been doing that wrong for years.
Yeah.
Why has nobody told me?
Yeah. And the fact is that you're not really actually doing it wrong. You're doing it the same way the rest of the industry does it because the industry has chosen to do it that way.
Yeah.
And it's outsiders, people that are completely ignorant of the issues, that tend to invent new processes because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
And therefore, I think something like your summit is so useful. Because you get all of that input in one place.
And it's also very useful for the school and for the university because it teaches us where we can play a role. I mean, where we can, educate the right skill sets, provide the right courses, where we can make our students more employable, where we can put something back into the county and give something back to the economy. I mean, I don't know if you've heard about the communal bid between University of Kent and Canterbury Christchurch for a medical centre in Kent.
At Bested on Junction 7 there.
Yeah, so that would be perfect opportunity to provide employment, to provide additional research and to provide more skilled people for the county.
Absolutely. It's interesting what you're saying there as well about the role of university. In developing the workforce, I have a huge degree of sympathy for educational establishments because trying to educate in a modern world is incredibly difficult because it changes. You know, you have 3-year degree programs. I was involved at the launch of the School of Digital Engineering and Arts when the faculty at the University of Kent first came along, and they decided to set up that faculty, and I was on the original panel that looked at it. And when they first set it up, the curriculum was set to deal with certain things. Within 3 months of the first program, half the stuff on it had been supplanted by new technology. So they had to go back and rethink the whole way they were going to teach the course because you just couldn't do it in a conventional way.
Yeah.
And I think across our entire educational establishment, that is an issue that we have to face, is that the world is changing so rapidly that we have to change the nature of some of the skills training that we do because it's just so different. But one of the other things I love specifically about Kent is that you are a very, very innovative university. You are prepared to look at different ways of doing things.
And we're putting a lot of emphasis on our teaching.
Yeah, absolutely.
Try to innovate that.
Absolutely, and that is something that's happened for over 30 or 40 years. Many years ago, I worked. I was a techie, and I worked in the city. I worked in banking, in networking technology, and the University of Kent was one of only two universities in the United Kingdom that actually did courses in telecoms and networking, and they did that before it became voguish. And therefore, you know, established themselves as a leading institution for that kind of technology that turned out to be the technology of the future. So they've always been a very innovative institution, and that's good. The other thing I like about your summit is that when you talk to employers, so many employers are disparaging about students coming out of school and college and university and being useless and all the rest of it and not able to read and write, yada, yada, yada. That's great. Except that where's the input from business back into our educational establishments to help them establish, what it is we need?
And we're putting a lot of emphasis, and that's, of course, one of our roles as well as the external relations team to make sure that businesses do connect with our school, that they come and guest speak, that they provide case studies.
Yeah.
We have another activity which is also called Pitch It, where businesses come in, they provide a challenge to a group of students, study it for 6 weeks and then pitch back their solutions to the company. It's all done for free. They may get an internship out of it, the company gets free advice, and the students get a real life experience of what it's like to work.
It's actually good fun. I'm a guest lecturer at the London School of Economics on their MBA program, and I really, really enjoy that. It is really good fun because it's outside of my sphere of expertise, because I left school when I was 14,
yeah.
So I didn't go to university or anything like that. So I find it hilarious that I teach on an MBA program at a university, which is really funny. But it's a good learning experience for me as well, you know, because I get to hear and feel and see what those people think about the world that they're facing as Generation Z now. Aren't we?
We're saying an A
again. Fairly soon. Yeah. And I've been round through the whole loop. That's a scary thing. But
the honesty is that some of these jobs aren't even around yet.
I've got a statistic for you. 61% of people that are currently in education will do a job that hasn't yet been invented.
Yeah. I know. And when I look at my two young sons, and I look at them, I think I don't even know what to prepare you for, because the world by the time you're out there in the labour market is so different.
Driverless car rescue squad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think I love it. I love it. So I love things like this.
Sex robot re-education programmer.
Yeah. I used to teach sexual health.
Did you?
When I was a nurse. Yeah. I loved it.
Did you?
Naughty. I was terrible. I was so naughty. I was so naughty, but very funny.
But you're right. You know, how on earth do you set up an education system to educate people for jobs that don't exist yet? You know, it's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't even know whether I should really encourage them to sit on their iPads all day, because you know, that's what they will be doing in 20 years' time, or whether I should not encourage them because it kills their imagination.
And we think they're not communicating, but actually they're communicating more than we ever have.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just on a different platform.
That drives me nuts when people start moaning about people being on their phones all the time and not communicating anymore. Communication is endemic now in our society, and it's something that is more prevalent than it ever was.
I talk to my daughter more now she's left home. She's in the second year because she goes to the University of Kent. Mm. I talk to her more now through the platform of Snapchat. Mm. In fact, while we're on air, she sent me that she's fed up of writing thousands of words at the minute. And since she's left home, than when she lived at home. And that's the honesty of where we are now in communication and the social media. It's social media. Mm. Love it.
Absolutely.
I mean, like James Sinclair last week, James Sinclair brought in a vlogger. Mm. He's vlogging all the time because he wants people to see what he's doing. He wants that. So this is what's coming all the time. There are jobs there for people.
I don't know how you see this, Flo, but again, I was talking to some people about this the other day, and we have this tendency as human beings to not extrapolate where we're going, but to negatively see what's not working anymore. And people are talking about the world of work, which is something that I'm heavily involved in because that's what my main businesses do. I collect tons and tons of data. I have amazing amounts of data available on the employment situation as it exists in the UK. And we collect data all the time. We do deep data mining on it, and we provide reports to selected people on the pattern of employment. And the glaringly obvious thing is that we're now entering a period where the whole concept of a job is changing. And what people don't, if you look at the historical scope, we only invented jobs 200 years ago. Mm. Before that, the concept of a job didn't exist. It's existed for 200 years, and now it's going to change again. And people can't get their head around that the whole concept of a job will be different for the next generation than it has been for the last five generations.
So what are people predicting?
Well, basically, you've got the gig economy, which is the underpinning of this, and people then throw in zero-hour contracts and nonsense like that, but zero-hour contracts are a very small part of it, and most zero-hour contracts are undertaken by people that want to balance their life-work balance, single parents or whatever that have to work particular hours. There's also an issue there with in-work credits as well, that if you're going to pay people to not work longer than 16 hours a week, guess what? They're going to work 16 hours a week. But the change in the job market is twofold. In my father's generation, you left school, you worked for an employer, you retired when you were 65, and they gave you a clock. Yeah. And when I left school, and I'd had two jobs by the time I was 17, my dad went ballistic at me and said, You're 17 years old. You've had two different jobs already. You're just a waster. You're just wasting your life.
It's funny how that's changed.
Yeah, exactly.
You were supposed to be loyal to your company.
Exactly, yeah. Now, in the generation that's just going through work, the average person will change jobs 17 times in their career and will have seven different careers. How many have you had so far?
Two.
Right, you've had two careers. You're behind the loop. You need to catch up. but that's going to change again. What we have is the gig economy. What we have are people that will not work 9 to 5 anymore. Who works nobody works 9 to 5. Your contract of employment says 9 to 5, but we have a phone. My phone goes off at midnight with people wanting me to do stuff. I get emails all the time. I get messages all the time.
I had this on Sunday. I was working Sunday evening before we went out.
Yeah.
And that's just normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the 9 to 5 is an odd concept anyway, because it means you're in a space for 9 to 5. You're in an office sitting at a desk, but you're not working for eight solid hours.
Absolutely. And that's where our productivity numbers have gone down the pan, because they measure productivity in the wrong way. Yeah, they measure it based on working
presence.
Hours. Being present.
Yeah.
And not when you're actually doing stuff, which is like 11 o'clock at night when somebody sends you a WhatsApp and you actually do something about it. So the gig economy is much deeper than people think it is. It's about doing little items of work. I also don't believe that employment, full-time employment, is the future. I believe that, you know, self-employment is the future.
I do.
And you will do Charles Handy wrote a book about this in 1971 called The Portfolio Career when he was professor of business at Oxford. And it proved absolutely spot on that basically people will have a portfolio of things that they do and different organisations. And it's also fascinating watching the change in how people behave. My youngest son is 22. Hmm. When he graduated, he messed around for a while, and then he got himself a job working for a fintech company, and he was a foreign exchange broker, and he did really, really well, and he worked at that for 9 months, and they called him in to give him a promotion, and he quit. And I said, why have you quit? And he said, because I want to do something else. And I said, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to go volcano surfing in Guatemala. Is there a lot of money in that?
What is that anyway?
Yeah, exactly. So he went volcano surfing in Guatemala and hung around in Costa Rica and various other places in Central America for a few months until he got bored and ran out of my money. And then he came back. And I went, now what are you going to do? And he walked into another job. In a completely different job, and he works as a business development manager for a digital media company. But again, he doesn't see any issue with working for a little while, stopping, going and enjoying himself somewhere, and then coming back and getting a job doing something else.
Yeah.
And if his grandfather was still alive, he'd be going ballistic by now, you know, because his whole approach to the world of work is, well, I'll do something when I need to do something, and I won't when I won't.
But... okay, playing devil's advocate. Mm. So from a management perspective, this is a nightmare.
Absolutely.
Just come in and out.
Absolutely.
And run in and run off.
Exactly.
You know, go away for a year and then.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Our entire leadership models, our management models, the way we handle things have all got to change. Everything is being discombobulated. Everything is being changed.
Or should it? I mean, there's something to say, I think, for staying somewhere for a bit longer, actually, and understanding a business and working together. You need to have that time to create a team and get that synergy going.
Yeah.
I mean, you only have people running in and out. You'll never get that.
No, you won't.
Where you really understand each other, like you guys understand each other doing this program. You know, you work so closely together.
Absolutely. And all of those things are absolutely right. Is how do we manage the future? How do we manage that? How do we manage when people don't work in the same spaces? As Berb was saying, her competitors are the other side of the planet. You know, we have a long tail network of things now. We have more and more people will work from home. More and more people will work in, you know, regional hubs. And not, you know, we talk to each other virtually, not realistically. Managing all of that is a nightmare.
But I don't know if it is. I can direct message people that I've never been able to direct message before.
Mm.
I can ask people with a higher social media platform at the minute. I can go straight to them.
Mm.
I couldn't have done that.
No, you can't.
3-4 years ago. I get guests on my show and people go, how do you get those guests? And I go, I ask them. I literally reach out. Yeah. It's not created as being cheeky anymore. It's not, you've got a methodology to go through.
It's true.
You know, I'm trying to get hold of the BBC. Mm. I'm having a nightmare.
Yeah.
I can get hold of one of the top global entrepreneurs at the moment in social media, I can get hold of them within an instant.
Yeah. And they like it too. You know?
Absolutely.
They love it.
We approach businesses in the same way, through social media, just by sending them a message
Instagram.
Or linking with them on LinkedIn.
Oh my God, LinkedIn and Instagram and are the
really
best
like
places
it.
At the minute. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, we've had the head of Google, the head of Twitter on this station. Just after Christmas, we've got the head of Google coming on. Easy. You contact them and say, do you want to come? And I go, yeah. Disintermediation is what's happening. Everything is changing, and there are so many things we need to do to manage the future. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I absolutely love what you guys are doing at the university with the summit. These kind of things are the starting point for discussing these issues, for talking to each other about how we're going to manage it and what we're going to do.
Paul, you should sit on the UK Workforce of the Future Roundtable.
Yeah, yeah.
We're expecting you.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm coming. Don't worry, I will be coming. Yeah. And I'd love to, I just want to listen to what everybody's got to say. I just want to hear what everybody's going
to
talk
to. Greek man.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. How on earth did you do that?
And it, you know, it's really the note we're trying to to strike here with the summit. Let's talk about what's possible rather than concentrate on what's not possible.
Absolutely.
Let's put something together because we can.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
We could talk about this all day.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. If people want to find out about the summit and how they can book their place, how can they do that?
By going to our website, Kent Business School website, go to our business pages or our news section, and you'll find all the information you need about the summit, but also about registration.
That's fantastic. If you go to Kent Business Radio or Biz Radio website, there is a link to it there on the homepage, and that will be there forever. So do go and follow that link. You're also on Twitter, are you not? It's Kent underscore KBS is your Twitter handle.
Yeah, or the other way around. KBS underscore Kent.
Oh, it could be. KBS underscore Kent. Yes, I think it is. You're right. KBS underscore Kent is the Twitter handle. Do follow them on the Twitter. Or follow the FSB Kent and Medway, or follow me at Vanilla Web. We're all talking about the summit, and you can find it.
Yeah, because FSB and IOD are heavily twittering about it. You know, we're all doing this together.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been
an
absolute pleasure to talk to you.
We've
only got a few minutes left. I've got a couple of emails left to read. Have you got?
I've got a couple of emails left.
Do you want to do one?
They're very festive. We would love to hear if you promote our festive volunteering fair in Sevenoaks with business and charity networking. So this is the Stronger Kent Communities program in partnership with Imago, I think it is, invites you to be part of Sevenoaks Festive Volunteers Fair. And that's on Thursday, December the 14th, 12 till 2 at Stag Plaza, and that's at Sevenoaks. And this is speaking directly to more than 25 different community stalls showcasing what they do. So that's to get info, advice, volunteering opportunities. Here, there's only free mulled wine and mince pies. I love a mulled wine, but only when you're snowboarding. And free festive treats, networking with local businesses. And there's a donation box. So go along. That's networking. So you need to go on to Eventbrite Sevenoaks Festive Fair networking tickets. Check it out.
Cool. I can't read all of this because it's too long, but I'll read you the headline from this because it's apposite to what we were just talking about. It was recently reported at the World Economic Forum that by 2025, 10% of all GDP will be stored in blockchains or related technology. Everything's changing. The day after tomorrow, on Thursday, December the 14th, at 1 p.m. is the Sevenoaks Chamber Christmas event at Riverhill. You can find out more by going to eventbrite.co.uk/Chamber of Commerce Christmas event at Riverhill, or you can email the Sevenoaks and District Chamber of Commerce team at info@sevenoakschamber.com.
That's Star Wars Day, don't forget, 14th of December.
Is
it's out on Thursday. We're very excited. Big family outdo. Anyway, New Romney Marsh Networking Group has arrived and is up and running events up to Christmas. Now these are you ready for this? December meeting is Marsh After Hours Networking, and that's on December the 13th. That's tomorrow, 5 p.m. Book on Eventbrite. Then we've got Marsh Networking Over Coffee in January the 10th. That's 10 till 2. That's at Cinqport's Arms. I take it that's a pub, is it?
It is indeed.
There we go.
In Romney High Street.
Okay. In the morning.
Hmm.
Ooh, I bet that smells in there.
Yeah.
And then Marsh After Hours Networking, January the 23rd. This is better. 5 till 6.30 at the Ship. You love the Ship.
I'm going there tonight.
I know.
It's the Channel Radio Christmas party at the Ship in Dymchurch.
Guess who's not?
Why aren't you going?
I'm teaching.
I
know. I can come down after in my leggings.
Anyway, we've reached the end of another show, Bird. Yeah, we have.
We've been amazing
today. I know. It's been really good, hasn't it?
It has been a great show.
I just need to tell you what's coming up on Channel Radio for the rest of today. At 4 o'clock, we have Natalie Bonet with the Kent Creative Show. And her guests today on Kent Creative are designer Margot Selby and drama students from Canterbury Christchurch University. So do tune in, 4 o'clock, for the Kent Creative Show, here with Natalie Bonet on Channel Radio. And then at 5 o'clock, we join Mr. Craig Avery on Channel One. Mr. Craig Avery, the ladies' favourite with his stripy socks, with 2 hours of celebrity interviews and music. That's the Craig Avery Show from 5 to 7. And then at 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock, you can hear, here on Channel Radio 2, the repeat of this very show. The Business Bunker Show is repeated.
It's amazing today.
It's 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock tonight. And then, of course, as always, on a Tuesday, we finish off with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
1, 2, 3, get down!
Full drum beat and a squidgy bass. I give you Vanilla Ace and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So as always on Channel Radio on a Tuesday, we finish off...
with Paul Andrews.
We finish off with Mr. Boy George and the Club Culture Show.
Nice.
I just want to say a huge, huge thank you to everybody for taking part in today's show. To our guest, Mr. Gary Turner of Zero, and our studio guest, the absolutely lovely Flochi Hutter of the University of Kent Business School. Thank you, Flo. And to my buddy here.
Buddy the Elf, what's your favourite colour?
The absolutely gorgeous and lovely bird on a bike. Miss Sarah Ann Lucas.
Can I just say, yeah. I've had so many people call me Miss on a bike.
Miss on a bike.
Miss on a bike. That's all I get now. It's hilarious. So there's a new bit of branding.
Okay, cool. So that's it for another show. We'll be back with you next week. Have a fantastic week, everybody. And we'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.